Welcome to Bates Motel, Season 5, Episode 4, Hidden. Caleb is dead. Romero is not dead. Is Norman in charge of whether or not Mother comes out or doesn't come out? Let's get going.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Welcome, you guys, to Bates Motel, Season 5, Episode...
There it is.
There it is. We're technically just a tick off this morning. I'm Joe Sanfilippo. I'm joined by Miss Dua Casey.
It is too early in the morning, guys. Hi, how are ya?
It is early, yeah. We're doing this at a weird time for us. And we also have on the line Julia Kearley.
Hello, good morning. It's psychic. This is my
banana. And we're listening to the Archies right now, singing Sugar Sugar in honor of the beautiful cake scene.
Sexy cake time.
Sexy cake time.
That's great. That was a beautiful sexy cake time.
I wanted to bake a cake for a while, and then shit got weird. But for a while, it was like, this is the sexiest bakery I've ever been to.
Well, shit gets weird when you have your date wear your dead mother's dress.
Dude. All right, well, let's take care of some business. Joe Braswell is not here with us today because he's a terrible person, and we don't love him anymore. But other than that, the rest of us are here. And so lots of stuff happened this episode. We'll get to sexy cake time in a second. Let's start at the very beginning, though. Jules, what'd you think of this episode?
Oh, come on. You know me. I love every single episode. This one was no exception. I thought it was actually a fascinating episode to see the sort of like the realization and the unraveling coming over Norman. I totally dug it. And you know, I wrote sexy cake time too in my notes.
Did
sexy
you really?
Cake time!
Sexy
yes,
cake time.
Right here, sexy cake time.
That was a sensual
pork. The sexiest cake I ever did see.
Dude! They made milk look so damn sexy. Like, you want to pour the milk? I'll help you pour the milk. Pour that goddamn milk.
It was great. It was beautiful. It was beautiful. And it was almost sad when you knew in just a few moments Norman was going to appear and it was all going to be over.
Oh, of course.
Awesome. What did you think, Ms. Dua Casey?
I thought it was good. So one out of the three people that I thought was dead last week actually ended up being dead. Dunkel's gone. I loved watching Chick this episode kind of navigate Norman's insanity. You know, Norman lost his he lost his cookies at the top of the steps, and he kicked him out when he was moving his stuff in. And then he shows up at his house later, and he's like, I was just overreacting. And the way that Chick handles Norman is just brilliant. I loved Romero's gangster. We peppered in a little bit of Romero's gangster this whole episode. It was great. It was a good episode. I liked it. I think that there's lots to discuss.
I agree with you guys. They never really step wrong. I was actually talking about this with a friend of mine, and it's one of those shows where you really, you know, it was interesting the structure of the show because they've agreed to 5 seasons. They, you know, we're wrapping it up now, obviously, and it's interesting that the difference we've talked about this in seasons past, how this show has gotten rid of the idea that we have to keep, you know, the rules of TV have been forever, that we just keep the show going in perpetuity and we make the smallest changes we can make so as to keep the secret sauce the same and keep the audience coming back, and we'll stretch it out for as long as we can until they basically tell us we can't make anymore. But I love that shows are doing this now, and I think Bates is one of my favorites that does it, where it's like, you know what, we're going to tell the story we're going to tell. It's going to take as long as it's going to take. And that's it.
Yeah.
That's the end of it.
Yeah.
We're done.
It leaves you wanting more, which
it
I think is really important, because you don't want shows to jump the shark anymore.
No, it's so goofy, right?
Yeah.
No.
We don't need Fonzie on water skis. And you know what's amazing about this is it gives them that freedom. And A&E did it with Mad Men. It did it with them. And like, they negotiate, obviously. Like, A&E's like, we'd like more. And, well, maybe. But it gives them the freedom to tell the story that they want, which I think makes for really, really good television. And you know what else they do? They don't, you don't necessarily need to have everybody in every episode.
No.
Yeah, maybe we'll see you. Maybe we won't. It doesn't matter. Let's start at the top, if you guys are okay with it, because I made a prediction last week that some of us were at odds with, that we got ourselves a dead Dunkel.
Dead Dunkel.
Yes, we do. Dead Dunkel.
Dead Dunkel. So yeah, we open right where we left off, on the street in the car with Chick in the car, and they're now Norma and Norman, Chick and Dead Dunkel on the ground, and they're actually talking about what they're going to do with this body. And I love the way they shot that scene, because they shot it from as Norman is talking to Norma, they shot it from the perspective where we as the audience could see that Chick's perspective was just them and Norman. Right? So Norma wasn't really there. But then Norman kept deferring to Norma for all of the advice. Anytime Chick brought up any scenario, he would turn to Norma to get approval. Did you see this?
Poor Chick. I never thought I'd say that, but poor chick navigating the madness of this scene is just, it's like, so I'll just wait until somebody makes a decision here. One of you, shit.
Norman was really interesting in that scene, asking if he should call the sheriff, it was an accident, what other things are they going to find? I mean, I know that he's crazy, but he knows that there's some crazy shit going on in his basement.
But remember,
he's
Norman,
aware of this. He should know better than to call the sheriff at this point.
But no, he doesn't. Because he's in this. I think this episode, one of the themes is Norman is getting confident. Norman's getting kind of almost cocky.
Yeah.
You know, and part of it stems from his complete lack of knowledge. Right. He doesn't know that his mother is dead in the basement. He doesn't actually know that on this level, this Norman level.
Mm-hmm.
And so for him,
Go on, sorry.
From his point of view, like, and there's nothing going on. I love, by the way, that he's waving the gun as he's saying it. What? Call the sheriff! What the hell? There's nothing going on here.
He's still aware that he was locked up, that Caleb had been locked up in the basement, that he was supposed to kill him, that they've done nefarious things in the past.
Yeah.
It just was an interesting choice for him to be so, like, so glib about it. Oh, no, just call the sheriff. It was
well,
about,
you know,
it was fine.
In fairness to him, the only people that knew that Caleb was covered up in the basement, was ever chained in the basement, are our chick and Norman and Norma.
Yes.
Which is, again, so tricky to remember that it's only one person.
But what's interesting about that scene is what it starts. It kind of starts the trajectory of what we deal with in the episode, right? Which is that Norman now has a conflicting opinion with the other part of himself. He has a disagreement with Norma. Now, since it was technically two against one on the street making that decision, but Norman didn't agree with it. So when you cut to the next scene where he's now upstairs, you know, when we talked, when we had Carrie Aaron on the show in previous episodes and we talked to her, and she talks a lot about in interviews that the state of the house is representative of what's going on in Norman's mind. Right? So when he decides to go upstairs, and I thought he was packing to move out, but he was actually just gathering Norma's things. He wanted to get rid of the dresses. I think that that was symbolic of the fact that he wants to get Norma out of his head. He wants to get her out of his mind. He's packing up her stuff. And I love that Vera can just be fun with it. Right? She's like, well, do I want the dresses or don't I? You make the decision.
And yes. So I mean, is this a way of because he's not getting rid of Norma, because that psychosis that doesn't happen until, well, maybe he is. You're right. This is the beginning of the split, right? He's beginning to be in a position where he's actually getting rid of Norma. He's preventing her from coming out. But so he's changing her. It's interesting to consider, right? So subconsciously they've structured the character that he is in a position consciously to say, I want to get rid of these dresses. Mm-hmm. But what does that mean subconsciously to the construct of mother that he has in his mind?
Exactly.
So he's changing the construct of mother by getting rid of things in the physical world.
Correct.
That's bananas.
Because that's all he can control. He can't control what's going on in his mind, but he can control whether or not the dresses are there. The dresses are really symbolic of everything. It's what he puts on when he turns into her. So I thought that was a huge, that's not something that they just like threw in there. Everything is intentional.
So if we ditch the dresses that Norma chose, and he's choosing new dresses for his construct of mother, then he's taking control of mother.
Maybe is, but he also couldn't.
But,
yeah.
But there's also the point where he's trying to get rid of them, but then instead he gives them to
his girlfriend.
Couldn't get rid of them.
Exactly,
he's sort of transferring his mother in a way. Something physical. He's saying that you when they had, and towards the end, I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but when they're having that dinner together, he said something along the lines of, it's hard to know what's real unless it's right in front of you and you're experiencing
it.
So he is making Norma real by projecting her onto this woman.
That is, yes. Yes, Julia. Yes.
You know, I gotta tell you, this is some above our pay grade shit going on up in here. We could definitely use a psychiatrist, which it looks like we might get next episode.
You know, if Braswell was here, his line right now would be, "Where the F is Dr. Edwards?
Where is Dr. Edwards?" But you know, Well, he's coming. He's coming back because there was an overcoat and a scarf, and inside the overcoat and the scarf was Dr. Edwards. So they're coming back.
Yeah, and as you know, I have my trusty Predict-a-Pen with me this episode. So now when we have predictions, I can Predict-a-Pen it. So let's ask just right now, will Dr. Gay Edwards be back on next episode, or was that just a teaser? Without a doubt, guys.
Without a doubt.
He will be back. The pen has spoken.
This show is... We're an interesting show. We've gone from really deep analysis of the symbolism to, you know what? Let's talk to the pen.
Let's ask the pen.
Let's see what the pen has to say.
The pen will know. The pen will be with us in future episodes.
I'm glad that we got into the symbolism of the dresses, and I think that we figured out some stuff. But again, that's one of the things I love about the show, is they actually will take the time to figure out the symbolism. Mm-hmm. And it's there if you want it or if you don't. If you just want to be plot-driven and you don't want to pay attention to the symbolism and you just want to accept that Norman was just throwing away some shit, you can do that.
Yeah.
But that's not all there is to it.
Well, you know what? It's interesting that I want to talk about. We did introduce a new character. We'll get to that in just a second. Brooke Smith played. There was a new sheriff, Dr. Green,
yes.
Dr. Jane Green, which is great. But can we talk about Chick for a second? So, the way that Chick is handling everything that's going on with Norman, you know, the first thing that happens is Chick gets rid of Dunkel is dead. Chick, in a ceremonial burying, gets rid
Viking
of a dead
funeral.
Body.
So, Viking burial.
A Viking burial. He gets rid of a dead body. I think that he thinks that that's earned him a little bit of clout. So he starts moving his stuff in.
I think it's not just the Viking funeral. I think that last scene also shows us all the other stuff Chick may have been doing as we go along. Like Norman's running around that last scene, and there's that orange juice and the sandwich kicking it there that hasn't been touched at the kitchen table.
Yep.
Because there is no Norma.
Yep.
But I wonder, for how long has Chick been cleaning up?
Yes.
How long has Chick been enabling Norman's psychosis by eating Norma's sandwich and drinking Norma's juice and cleaning up the dishes and handling all the shit that Norma in Norman's mind is actually doing.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how much of that Chick's actually been handling for him to enable this psychosis to keep everything going, so he can keep taking notes about it.
Yeah, well, we did talk about that a little bit. Julia brought that up last episode, where, you know, having Chick be there is enabling his psychosis, because it's saying it's okay to keep him in that kind of level two where Norma is there as his delusion in the house, because it seems real.
Right.
If Chick is there to validate it, it seems okay. But when Chick isn't there, you know, it doesn't seem okay. But now that Chick has the bird... Mm-hmm. And the stuff in his trunk, and they're at the bottom of the stairs, and Norman comes up to him, and he's like, guess what, buddy? You can't live here anymore.
I love the way they shot that scene. I love Norman in that scene.
Me too.
I love Chick in that scene. I love how physically imposing Chick is compared to Norman, and I love how Norman handled it. Norman didn't try and get tough, because he can't. But he just handled it like the owner of a business, saying, you know what, I understand your point of view, I get it, and I respect it, and we can still be friends. But you just can't live here. And you can see him kind of gearing up to do it. And you can see Chick thinking about other ways to handle it.
He's like,
realizing,
too many people. That's what he said. There are too many people. And then Chick's look.
Awesome.
Yes.
Awesome.
Julia, what did you think about... You always have great insight on the Chick-Norman dynamic. What did you think about their exchange?
It's like my favorite thing of all time. And this episode was no exception. First of all, the Viking burial was like my favorite thing. It was also kind of cool, I feel like, for Chick, because Caleb is the one who effed him up so bad.
Mm-hmm.
That was a nice send off that he was the one who actually did the killing. So I think that was an interesting way to send him off.
And there was also the respect, right?
Yeah, with respect. But Norman, when he was talking to Norma and he was packing up her dresses and he was really mad at her, he said, since when did you and Chick become such great friends, or something like that? So Norman's getting a little bit jealous, I think, too, of the relationship between Norma and Chick, because I feel like Norman feels that Chick is enabling Norma.
Well, you know, I think
her actions and her reactions are okay.
We got to start.
He wants to get rid of that.
I think we got to start referring to Norma as mother. I think people that have been throwing some shouts our way are 100% right about that, because this is not Norma. Now this is mother, and this is just a construct.
Norma is dead in the basement.
Norma's dead in the basement.
Interesting.
She's the real dead eyes. But I think you're 100% right. And how bizarre is all this, right? That you've got a mental construct teaming up with a guy on the ground trying to keep track of everything so he can write a book that eventually will be made into a little movie, a little Easter egg for everybody right there.
Yep.
And then,
which he showed Norman in the trailer. By the way, I don't blame Chick for wanting to move into that house. Did you see his digs, man?
No, it's not good.
Yeah,
it's
I thought that too.
Like, the house is a massive upgrade. I don't care how many people in Norman's Head you have to talk to. It's definitely better than the shit box you're living in.
Yeah, we know absolutely. Now what his motivation is.
Well, let me ask you this.
Do you think Chick was pissed when he got kicked out, or hurt, or both?
Both.
Well,
I think both.
Me too.
Well, the thing is, I thought that he was going to challenge Norman originally, but then when you notice, like, he put his stuff in, and I love how they played the end of that scene just a little bit comical. He's like, well, can I come over next week? What about tomorrow? Next week? And he was like, you know, and then he was like, don't forget to cook the chicken I bought you. So I think that he understands.
Real bad.
Yeah.
Right.
He understands that Norman is a crazy person, and I think that he has respect, but ultimately he wants to get his book written, right? So he's willing to fit into this play any way that he can. And so I think that he knows that if he just kind of steps back for a minute, Norman eventually went back up to him and he was like, oh, Chick, what are you talking about? You misread that. That's not crazy.
I just
crazy.
Said you couldn't live with us. We're just.
I now need something from you, Chick. I'm ready for you to be back here. Do you know how to hide a car?
Do
you know?
Well, let's get in. But I do love that those scenes are, like we said, the first scene and then this scene again. Chick is the only one who realizes he's only talking to one guy, you know? And it's so, I love those moments of realization within those conversations. Like, you could see Chick wanting to say, I want to talk to your fucking mother about this.
Yeah.
And then the realization, like, God damn it, there's no one there. This is just the one guy.
But mother likes me. Yes, mother likes you, but she's not well. And so when Norman is in the trailer asking for Chick's help to hotwire a car, and he was like, mother is out of control. I don't know what to do. The look on his face, when I think that he has real sympathy, I mean, it has to be fascinating to deal with somebody that's in the deep depths of psychosis.
Yes. And I think, you know, and they've laid all the crumbs down for this to be, obviously, for this to be the author of the piece. But eventually, I think, and they've also laid enough crumbs down for us to be very comfortable if Chick doesn't make it through this, too. That we won't lose any sleep, because Chick has definitely done the wrong thing over and over again. Mm-hmm. So we'll see.
He's not a good guy.
No. He is definitely not. We'd be just fine if Chick doesn't make it through. On the other hand, I do love the idea of the last episode, Chick with a good haircut doing Good Morning, Good Morning America. You know, just with his glasses, a good haircut, and a nice, you know, chic suit.
Oh my God, that's brilliant!
Don't you think? Can't you just see that? Like, we're so glad you're here, Chick. Is it? Yeah. The Viking funeral. One last thing I want to say about it. Where is everyone in the Pacific Northwest? Like, you can
just set something on fire and set it
no
off.
No one's like, hey, is that a fire?
Yeah, that's the most inconspicuous body, you know. He should have referenced Norman. I mean, Norman just puts him in a bag and puts him in the lake. That's how you do it.
All right, well, it seems
Chick does everything with a little touch of flair.
He does.
You know, he's a little eccentric.
I love that he's doing a Viking funeral in some sort of a kimono. It was good stuff.
Yeah, it wasn't.
I know. It was so good.
All right, should we talk briefly about Sheriff Green, the brand new sheriff in town, who comes in on a bicycle? She's very environmentally friendly. She rolls in on a bike.
In the Pacific Northwest.
She's very hippy dippy. She rolls in on the bike. Okay. She's asking the reception or dispatch. I'm not really sure
dispatch.
Who she is. Is
it receptionist?
I'm not really sure.
It's not an attorney. It's not law office.
Hold my calls, Ellen. So she comes in and she checks in with her, and I think the first line is the new numbers are in. It seems to me like crime is down, right? Mm-hmm. Isn't that the gist of what we're getting?
So Sheriff Romero's out and crime is down.
Crime
but
is
then
down.
The DA calls. What do you think that phone call was about?
I suspect it was about Sheriff Romero.
Yeah.
I imagine so.
So Brooke Smith, I'm just going to pull this to light really quickly. Brooke Smith plays Doctor.
She doesn't. She's not Dr. Hannibal Lecter.
Just kidding. Brooke Smith plays Sheriff Jane Green, and she's been in oodles of stuff.
Oodles.
She's played a lot of character roles. She was in Weeds. She's been in a ton of stuff, but I think the role that we kind of know her from is It Puts the Lotion on the Skin. She was in Silence of the Lambs.
I'd so fuck me.
She.
I'm sorry, I can't help it.
Which quote? You can say it.
I know, it's okay, isn't it?
So when we are at when Sheriff Green talks to Norman, the first thing she does, she goes up to Bates' house. Why? Because Mr. Blackwell's address for the Bates Motel was there, and she wants to talk to Norman. And that conversation was really great. I love her kind of, I love, first of all, that this was a woman. Julia, what did you think about the sheriff?
Oh, I love Brooke Smith. And yes, of course, I mean, I feel for her at times because it's so hard for her to break out of that one. Everyone sees her as that one character from Silence of the Lambs, but she brings such flair to all her characters. I watched her on ER, on Weeds, or not ER, what's the other one? Grey's Anatomy. Grey's Anatomy, Weeds, this. Like, she brings her own character to everything, and she makes everyone forget after the initial shock of, oh, wait, she was in the little tunnel thing. But her scenes with Norman, she was handling him so well. And he was, I'm sorry, but Norman was acting so suspicious. He was the worst.
Yes.
The worst, wasn't he?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. His stuttering. He was like, oh, you said it on the porch.
Well, that was the second scene, but yes.
Get it together.
Get it together, Norman.
Yeah. Well, Norman, and it's funny because I'm shocked. Stress makes Norman black out. Let's not all forget this. So anytime he's highly stressed out, he goes to a different place. So, you know, this is really kind of pushing him right towards the edge. There were two initial scenes with Miss Brooke Smith. There was the first one that was on the at the door at the Bates house, and then the second one was actually in the Bates Motel. And, you know, I'm going to defer back to our listeners here, because I'm pretty sure, and Julia and Joe, chime in if you know this, I'm pretty sure the Bates Motel scene where she asks to look at the guest registry and Norman is eating candy and asking and looking, I'm pretty sure that's shot for shot a scene out of Psycho. And except it's not that, it's not about the Blackwell missing, it's actually about the missing chick, what's her name?
I don't remember.
Marion Crane.
Marion
yes. Crane. But I think that they actually took that scene shot for shot because it was so familiar to me, and I was like, is this right out of Psycho? So it looked like Anthony Perkins. And so if anybody knows that answer, it actually makes me want to go back and watch the movie.
Well, it's about that time, don't you think? We should all spend some time
watching.
Yeah,
again.
It might be that time because we're about to redo it. Okay, so we know that the sheriff smells something about our boy here that doesn't smell right. I think the first scene, she gets the sense that he's a little off. And then I love that she did the cop thing, which, you know, I got friends who are cops, and they all get mad when I give them shit about this, because they all ask questions, like, the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, open-ended, hey, what about... Don't cop me, goddammit! Don't you cop me! You know, and they always get... What are you talking about? I got a sound copping from you, dammit! So she's asking the open-ended questions, which, of course, are making him into a stutter bunny. And then he oversteps, which is the point of the open-ended question, is to make you, just to lead you in and let you overstep. And he covered pretty good.
He was so bad.
Oh, I know. But I love that line of hers too. Like, oh, police work, it's all such silly stuff until it's not anymore.
Yeah,
you know.
You just said you have too much stuff. You don't know what you're doing.
Oh.
You don't know how much stuff you have.
He said, but it's all mine. I know that. There's nothing else. Shit. So I love that. I love that there's suspicion. I love her demeanor. I love her smiling, not trying to physically intimidate. She's a lady. She's going to approach it totally differently, which brings out a totally different dynamic in Norman, which I love. They build themselves in these you know, you could have gone with another guy for sheriff and you had the same dynamic of I'm the sheriff, I'm intimidating you, and Norman going like, okay, I'm intimidated. Nope, didn't do that. I love it. Brilliant writing always. She's suspicious, I think. But can we talk briefly?
About the car?
Can we talk about the car?
Yeah,
I think
well,
it's time to talk about the car.
Well, she's looking for the car. I love that.
That's a black and white. It's a black and black and gray Lincoln. Late 90s.
If you happen to see it, so they step back. So Norman and Norman throughout this episode have had a whole bunch of conversations, which I think I'll point out really quickly, that have gotten darker and darker in with lighting. I don't know if you noticed this,
but
the very first conversation is really light in the bedroom, and then it's at the bottom of the stairs, and it's a little bit darker, and it's almost like Norma, because every time Norman has the Norma delusion, it's really, really light. But now it's starting to get darker and darker, as if Norma is actually pulling into the darkness of Norman's reality. But this car is an interesting scenario, because I think it's almost the breaking point for Norman dealing with Norma. I mean, when they go to look for this car, and Norman's insistent that they look for this car, right? Norma just wants to let it be,
right.
And they look for the car. But they look for the car, and when they find it, they're in the middle of the woods. And I swear to God, I thought Romero was going to pop out in the woods. Did you?
No, it's episode 5. They can't.
I thought he was going to pop out, you know, wound and all, and he was just going to see Norman just screaming at him, at himself with this car hidden. And then I thought, yeah, I thought that was going to be the standoff. I think I'm thinking too far ahead here.
Well, I think you're a couple episodes ahead of yourself. Because you can't kill Romero yet. He can't die yet. He's got stuff he's got to do. By the way, late 90s Lincoln, if you ever tried to hide one, that's a big effing car. That you're not hiding a Toyota Corolla or a little hatchback. You're hiding a 22-foot beast.
They put branches on it.
They did. You got to think about how long it takes. Like I said, you're not covering up a Yugo. You're covering up a late 90s Lincoln, which is the size of a football field. That car is such a massive thing. So let's talk about the search for the car, because it seems to be, you know, we're pushing down this road, for me anyway, one of the overarching things, the themes of this episode is Norma, obviously, Norman breaking from mother. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be that the reason he's breaking from mother is that his construct of mother is no longer led by living mom. It's mm-hmm. Now it's led by Norman only and Norman's recollection mm-hmm. of mom. And mother, is making mistakes. Mm-hmm. Mother is doing things that Norman, when he finds out about them after his blackouts, mm-hmm. does not agree are the best idea. Mm-hmm. You're not making the best choices right now. Mm-hmm. Hiding the car this close, just covering it up with branches, he's not comfortable with that. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, he did it, but... right?
Let's not forget.
The crazy thing to try and remember. But it's interesting that this break that's coming is because mm-hmm. he doesn't agree with the way mother's handling shit. Mm-hmm. And so the fight in the woods, and again, you know, I think we've talked about this in the past, how Norman's construct of mother is always going to be Norman's construct of mother. So it's colored by his understanding of what she was, and so it's essentially an adolescent boy's construct of womanhood.
Correct.
Which is
this is deep. Joe.
Well, that's what the show is, right?
This is deep, deep stuff.
So it's adolescent boys' construct of motherhood. So it's authoritarian, but it's frivolous, mm-hmm. and it's we make choices based on expedition, not what's expeditious, not necessarily what's right. Mm-hmm. And she's flirty, and she's kind of, you know, like when she's kicking in the rain, Mm-hmm. Like, this is not what a grown woman would do.
Well, what's interesting, too, is that, you know, we always talk about Norman's three levels, right? He has his three levels of psychosis. And normally, murder always happens in that third level.
Right.
When he's in the deepest. Well, when mother, is there, this is his, like, solid level two
right.
of crazy. Now, he gets so frustrated with mother that he tries to strangle her to the point of unconsciousness in his level two.
Well, let's get into that for a second, because that and she's we get old dead eyes for real, Jules. What did you think of this? This is
old dead eyes.
This is not Lizzie Keene old dead eyes. This is legit old dead eyes.
This is real life dead eyes.
What did you think of that, Jules?
The fantasy started to break. For
yes,
him, that he sort of realized that he is living in these different worlds. I feel like Norman so badly wants a sense of normalcy, and having mother around making these poor choices is preventing him from that. So when she, in that pivotal scene out in the woods where he chokes her and tries to kill her, and he steps back and she is the mummified version for a moment with the glass eyes,
right.
uh-huh. glassy eyes. And his reaction to that is just that moment of everything starting to break. And then we get that at the end as well, when mm-hmm. he runs home to confront mother,
yep.
and the house is bleak as it is in real life, not
yes.
the fantasy house.
Mm-hmm.
So now, did you guys notice how quickly mother died?
Yeah.
Like,
it
didn't take as long as it would actually
yeah.
take to choke someone out. It was very fast.
How did you know, Joe?
What? Nothing. I don't even know what you're talking about right now. There's no one under my house. No one! It you know, normally you have like that, oh, and the scene goes on a mm-hmm. long time, and there's like four or five cuts, and then you see the, ah, at the end.
Yep.
Didn't happen that way. It was one, two, yep. glass eye. Oh, shit. You know?
Yeah.
And I
it
think
takes
that,
less time when you strangle a delusion.
Yes. We have noticed when you are strangling your own mental delusions, they die very quickly. But they can come back. So she comes back. Old Dead Eyes is back. But it's interesting. That's the whole theme of the episode,
she's
right?
She's pissed. She's like, don't ever do that.
Don't you ever do that again.
You're grounded, young man.
And am I the only one that noticed that she had that big yellow flashlight and they left without it?
Oh, good catch. Oh. I didn't catch that.
Mental, now, I wonder, I mean, that might be a mental case thing to notice, because is it more likely that Norman was walking with two flashlights, or one of them was just a figmentation of his imagination? I don't know.
Something about the lights going out. That's got to be symbolism in some sense.
They don't really miss a trick on this show.
You know what's also interesting about that scene before we leave that scene?
Yes.
Is that Mother also seems to understand that the fantasy is breaking. So when she comes back to life, I guess, in that moment, she says, what's really going on here? Why are you annoyed? Why can't I do anything right? Mm-hmm. You know, like she understands, Mother understands that it's breaking as well. Mm-hmm. So I think there's going to be this push-pull of Norman trying to sort of vanquish the Mother fantasies, but Mother desperately trying to hold on to stay alive
in his
head.
It has to get really dark, because if you see the Mother, like in the movie Psycho, the character of Norma, Mother, is really mean and angry and not happy, and he's very afraid of her. So it has to get to this really, really dark place soon, that there's just this resentful, like, I don't even want you here anymore, but you're still here. And it's crazy. But now that he has the dresses, and he gives the dresses to Madeline, and he has, you know, these great exchanges with Madeline in the hardware store, with the funny lines about the shower curtains, and he's going over there for dinner. Now he sees Madeline as this new, fresh version of his mother, which is this, like, really kind of, you know, rooted in reality. What was that line again? Let's talk about that dinner scene.
Well, that's what I was... Well, let me ask you... Let's do one thing. Let's do one thing first. Let's talk about the hardware scene. Because I feel like that hardware store, we get to see a different Norman than I... Well, at least one we haven't seen in a long time. He's genuinely charming. And he's laughing.
Yeah.
Is this too weird? And he's got, like, a... I think we got a little sense of how Freddie Highmore's game actually rolls. Like I was like, Freddie, I'm going to bed with you right now, man. Look at you. Like, he's got that big smile, and he's, oh, you know what? This is too weird. I'm giving you my dead mother. I'm sorry. This is bananas. And she's, no, it's not. Yeah, it's fucking weird. But she's, no, it's great. And he's like, okay, well, you know, but he's a charming guy laying some track with the girl at the hardware store. Mm-hmm. And it was the most normal, relaxed. I've seen him in seasons since, goes back to what's her name in season one, where he was just comfortable.
Bradley. Yeah.
Like, this felt like a very normal guy. Mm-hmm. And I loved that. And I loved that we got to see that. And obviously, he's not allowed to have it for real. But, and like you said, the Easter egg, the shower curtains. Yeah, we go through these like crazy. You wouldn't believe it. the way we do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But what did you think of that scene? Did you think there was anything going on besides that?
I thought that they needed that scene. This was a really, really dark episode, so you needed to kind of pepper in that, you know, that playfulness that Norman can have. I think that the scene after that, the one where he's having the conversation with Madeline Loomis at the top of his stairs, and there she's inviting him to dinner because she has tried on the dresses and they fit, and she's like, hey, would you like to come having dinner? Would you like to come? When he hangs up that phone and he gives this little boyish giggle, like, that, it was so cute. And
so
it's
giddy.
Nice to see these little cute giddy scenes, because it makes you still root for him.
Yeah, what did you think, Jules?
I think that hardware scene was kind of pivotal for Norman, who I sort of referenced earlier, I think, so desperately wants a sense of normalcy. So that gave him a taste of that, of what, like, real life could be like outside in the world, in the light.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is part of the reason that he's trying to break so desperately with Mother, because he wants that. And now I feel like he sees that he can sort of have the best of both worlds in his new projection of Mother onto Madeline.
Mm-hmm.
A happier version, like you were saying earlier, Dua, like a happier version of what Mother could be.
Yep.
So I think that was sort of his sort of moment of reckoning of, like, this is what I want. This is how I can do it.
Yeah.
So she's would you say that Madeline's kind of the wedge between him and Mother? Like, that would be like the like, on the one hand, I can see a normal life, relatively speaking. On the other hand, I'm in this crazy shit for the rest of eternity. So you see him trying to wedge her out?
It's always, if you notice, I mean, that's the constant in the whole series, right? That it's always he feeling sexually towards a female that drives that wedge between him and his mother. So when he's having dinner and enjoying himself and saying, you know, it's hard to know what's real and not real in any moment unless it's right in front of you. You know, once he gets, that's why Madeline can't be around for very long. And we'll talk about that in predictions, because he knows that if Madeline's around, Mother won't approve, and he can't get rid of that mother persona. You know, so that's...
But he tries. So well, that brings us to dinner. So let's get to sexy cake time, because that seems to be the crux of what's going on there. So we have dinner and wine, which always makes me nervous when Norman's drinking, mm-hmm. because that seems out. I don't know who's going to be in charge. But when we get done with dinner and how does she, what there was some good stuff at dinner. Let's not skip that. There were some interesting lines at dinner, right? What's real? What's not real?
Yeah.
And we talked briefly about that earlier, didn't we?
Yep. It's hard to know what's real and what's not real. Did anybody else think that scene was a little bit reminiscent to the teacher scene?
Yes.
It was
way back in the day.
There's a lot of hearkening back to season one in this, but when they're baking a cake, when they have sexy cake time, and he kisses her, and then he sees the vision of Norma, and then all of a sudden he has these quick flashes
of what's going to happen,
of what exactly what will happen, and he gets freaked out and he leaves. And then it's interesting because for a moment we didn't know if it was what was happening or what he was seeing could possibly happen.
Right.
But he leaves and he goes to search for Norma, and she's not there, as you mentioned, Jules, in that really, really dark and desolate house. And then he was like, this isn't funny. And I think that he thinks in his head that his mother is upset because he said that he was going to go to Madeline's house. So when he comes back, she's gone. She's like, well, I'll show you. And so he's looking for her, and I think the stress of looking for her that made him turn into her?
Let me ask you a question. Let me go back a little bit before we get into that, because I think that's the crux of the episode. So when he was in sexy cake time, sexy cake time, we poured the milk and we poured the milk time, and it's hot, hot, hot. And then we're gonna kiss. And again, what's interesting and almost imperative for Norman, the female is the sexual aggressor. Mm-hmm. So he's in it to win it. I'm here to bake the cake with you, and I'll lay innuendo down, but I'm not going to make... Oh, shit, here she comes. Mm-hmm. So she makes the first move, right? And the kissing, I love the way they shoot it. Like, I love Freddie. He's a brilliant actor. He's just, I don't know how to, oh, shit. Yep.
It's a little awkward. Doesn't know where to put his hands on her back.
It's so great.
Yeah.
And it's not 12-year-old boy. It's close enough for a hand grenade. It's close enough that we get that sense. Here's my question for you guys.
I always feel like Norman is the worst kisser.
Right?
Out of my notes, too.
I just like Freddie.
A little limp and not really.
Do you think when Freddie Highmore is talking to a girl for the first time, like the third thing he says is, look, the kissing from the show is not how I actually do it. You know that. I'm really quite good.
I'm a very good actor.
That's a put on. So what I wonder from you guys, do you think that he stopped mother from coming? Do you think that in that moment, right, he had the visions of what could happen, and at that point, did he stop Norma from mother from coming out? And if he stopped her, does that mean he believes he has some control of it?
What, that's a really interesting question. I think that it was, I don't know if he, I think perhaps because they're at odds and they're angry with each other right now, that his anger, yes, he maybe was resistant to becoming her. Because in that moment, that scene could have played very differently, right?
Right, of course.
They would have kissed, he would have become mother, she would have killed her, and then it would have been over. He did. He stopped that, and he went back to the house. Is it because he wants to control it? I don't know. Jules, what do you think? I'm going to defer back
right
to you.
Well, right before he left for Madeline's, he had that exchange with his mother, telling her that, you know, begging her, promise me you won't do anything about her. She says, I promise I'll protect you. Like, she never says,
right.
Well, you know, he also says, or she says, you have free will and so do I.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of freaked me out a little bit. That sort of showed that mother is in control at times, sort of proving it to Norman that she is control when she wants to be. But then he comes back that you have to accept me being in charge of my own life to make my own decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's trying to assert himself back to mother, and she's fighting back. So there's a major push-pull going on.
They're at war.
Let me ask you guys a question. So when he gets back to the house, right, he's run away, and Madeline's, my fault, not your fault, be happy you're alive.
Mm-hmm.
So he runs to the car, he gets home, he's running through the house, and we talked about this earlier, the chick isn't there to clean up, and so he's seeing that there's orange juice and an untouched
sandwich.
And he's seeing, you know, that the house is dark and dingy, and it's not this bright-lit place that he left with mom sitting on the couch reading a book. So when he gets back, is he running through the house because he's feeling bad looking for Norma, for mother? Or is he running through the house and he's feeling bad and he's needing her? Or is he running through the house to kind of like, what's going on there? Is he running through the house to find her? Is he running through the house to prove that she's not there?
He's trying to find her because he says, "Mother, don't play games," like as if she's hiding from him.
You're right. I think you're right. So he's looking for her.
Yes.
He's not looking to prove she's not there. He's needing her.
He's needing her. And I think that my thought was that he thought that she was mad that he went to go see Madeline. So she was like, "Well, screw this. I'm not going to be here when you get home." And so now he's going to look for her, and so then he becomes her.
So
in that moment where he is kissing Madeline and he sees flashes of her, do you think that he thinks that she was really there?
That's what I was going to say. So when he gets back to the house, is it needy, "Mother, don't play these games," or is it mad, "God damn it, Mother, what were you doing stalking me on my date? How did you even get in the window?
Where are you? You're not here. You're over at Madeline's house right now."
Do you think that might be what's going on? So I'm trying to get to the bottom of that. And then who looks up that last shot?
Oh, that's Norma.
That's Mother that looks up.
That's Mother.
Jules, what do you think?
I think that was Mother that he turned into at the very end there.
So you guys think that's Mother?
You know what? I don't know, because in that last moment when he sees the dinginess of the house, every time he's been in that house, he never sees it like that. Whether Norma's in the room or not, he sees the house full of light and Norma and Mother. But in that moment, it was dark and he was very, very much alone. And I think you could take it both ways. Either yes, he turns into Mother, or that's the moment where the fantasy starts to really break.
Interesting.
When he realizes that she really is dead.
He did also, I mean...
Well, it looked like a triumphant look. One way or the other, whoever came out happy.
Exactly. Well, yeah, because it was Norma. I think that when he was running through the house, he had just, like, he'd just come from Madeline's house, right? So Madeline, for us and for him, equals reality. So when he comes from a situation that is, in fact, real, and he goes back to the house quickly, maybe he sees it as it is in reality, which is dark and dingy and nothing. So maybe he got that moment, and he's looking for his mother, and then... He never stays in that place for very long, right? So maybe he just switched from level one to level three immediately, because Norma is like, "You know what? You had your chance. You kissed her. I'm here to protect you. I'm out now."
So you think...
Could it be, though? Could it possibly be a triumphant moment, a triumphant look, because he really did get... He finally got rid of Mother, and he's finally free?
All right, so here... That's the question,
ooh,
Jules. I think that's the question. Audience, if you guys are listening at home, if you're on iTunes or if you're checking us out on YouTube, let us know what you think. Because I think it was Norman. I think Norman looked up for a moment of triumph that he was in charge for a second. And Jules seems to be, you might be leaning that direction too.
I think it was Norman. I'm on Team Mother.
So Du is on Team Mother. We're on Team Norman, relatively. But we'll see. And then I'm curious what you guys think. Let us know, because I think that's that. Whoever popped out, that's going to be integral what's going forward.
Only because we see Rihanna in previews to come, right?
So we got to see Rihanna.
Madeline Loomis cannot be here, right? She needs to be dead.
So you're saying Madeline Loomis
has
to be gone now. You think Madeline's dead?
I think,
save it for predictions. Hold on a second. We didn't talk about Romero.
I know.
We got to talk about Romero finding the only phone booth left in all of North America. He found a phone booth, and next to it was a unicorn and a leprechaun. And then there was that one virgin in Hollywood. They were all together, and so Romero, let's get Romero squared away before we go, because we're running out of time. So Romero is obviously we open with Romero back right where he started.
Gangster.
Shot up against that car, and he tells the kid, "Hey, you know what? No, which it is very serious. Why don't you go get me some bandages from the house? I'm going to bone out while you're gone." He bones out. He wanders through the woods.
By the way, I like that he can keep a nice, steady jogging pace with a shotgun injury to the stomach.
Listen, I can't help but feel you're giving Romero a little less credit than he's due.
I'm like,
that's
Nestor
Carbonell. We know Nestor.
He's still
Nestor's
running like a solid like 14 minute mile there.
I think he was. I'm not gonna lie, shot or not shot, I'm not keeping that up for long.
Oh my goodness,
what happened to you, Joe? No. So Romero, he runs from the kid. He finds the only payphone left in America. He calls. He runs that ATM ambulance scam, which was gorgeous.
Yes,
I love that.
And he knows, I like that move, too.
Slick, right? And he knows that he's got to make sure he gets a paramedic ambulance, because so he says the right things. Mm-hmm. He says, hey, it's an OD, so don't just send a, send a wagon loaded with drugs that I can steal. So he goes in there, he cleans out the ambulance, smooth, gets a few bucks out of the dude's pocket.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, ambulance drivers, I think we learned something today. don't leave your shit in the back of the ambulance.
Yep.
And then he runs. He continues off on his quest to get to the Bates before he's dead. It seems to me that's basically what we're doing. Like mm-hmm. he cleans out all of the shotgun pellets,
mm-hmm.
but he's got that one gouge in the middle. And it seems to me that that's kind of the integral part, because instead of trying to clean that out, he kind of jams some gauze in there to kind of like stop the bleeding. And to me, that's like a, you know what, I don't give a shit if I make it out of this or not. I'm going to kill this little bastard before this is done.
I just need to buy myself some time.
That's it.
I need a few days.
Yeah. That's it.
It's a suicide mission.
Yeah, because you know that's going to go septic. There's no question about it. You just go jamming shit inside.
We'll know that's going to go septic?
I'm pretty sure when you just jam shit into an open wound, it's going to go septic.
Yeah.
So I've been wrong before. That's happened. I may be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I'm on the right track. So finds the payphone next to the unicorn. He calls the ambulance, ATM, and then he goes and he finds Maggie's house. Who the hell's Maggie?
Maggie. I don't. Have we seen Maggie before, Julia?
I couldn't remember.
I don't. Maggie looks really new to me. If anybody at home is listening and you know who Maggie is, who is Maggie?
Yeah,
you should make posters.
Tell us if we don't know.
On milk cartons, but Maggie was a friend.
And she's got his back, and he's going to go rest up in Maggie's house.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe she's going to do some doctoring, I hope.
And hopefully wash his pants.
I don't remember who Maggie is.
Yeah, his pants are dirty. He needs to get cleaned up.
Yeah.
And maybe patch up his eyes. His eyes don't look good either.
Poor
Romero's having a rough go.
A little rough.
Yeah, spending a lot of time in that makeup chair, for sure.
Oh, definitely. Well, I think we've covered all of our bases here. Should we go to predictions? Yes, we should go to predictions.
I think we should go to predictions.
Normally,
I've got
at this
my predictive
point,
pen.
There it is.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
Jules, as always, because we're mean-spirited, you go first.
And then I will. Any prediction you have. Yeah, and then we'll go to predictive pen.
What's the predictive pen?
It's a predictive pen. You tell me your prediction, and then I'm going to. It's like a magic eight ball.
Picture a magic eight ball with only a handful of settings. But go. What do we got?
Okay, I don't really have one yet. I don't know.
All right, wait a minute. Okay, hold on just a second.
Go, Dua.
I'm pretty certain that Madeline Loomis is going to die in the next... Like, she's dead.
So you're saying Madeline Loomis is either dead now or dead next episode?
No, she's going to be dead next episode. However, she's just going to be missing. Right? She's going to be missing. But Norman, after what happened, that next scene would have been the Norma mother... going over and killing Madeline.
So you're saying that mother is who popped up?
No brainer. That's what
says the predictive pen.
No brainer.
So you're saying your contention is that mother looked up in the kitchen, wang.
Yep.
And then mother went down to Madeline's house and said, hey, it's me, Norman. My bad. I shouldn't have run away. We should definitely have sex. Step.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly how she envisioned it.
Got it. So that's what happened.
I can get behind that.
Oh, I hate that she might be right. Okay, so Jules, you got nothing?
What?
You got no predictions?
No.
You think we're
going to
see Dr. Gay Edwards?
I'm sort of like in the ether. I have no idea what's going to happen next. I love it.
All right, so I don't really have one either. I think yours might be right.
Wait, we're
on two different teams here. We've got Team Mother and Team Norman in the kitchen. You guys tell us what you think, who you think popped up in the kitchen there, and we'll find out next week. Jules, where can the young people find you?
Twitter, on Instagram, with my name Julia Carely, JULIACEARLEY, and there in the studio with you guys for Blacklist Redemption and the Blacklist.
Miss Dua Casey, where can we find you?
Hi, my name is Dua Casey. You can find me on Twitter at Dua Casey, DUAKAISSI, and I post a whole bunch of fun art. They've got a lot of great fan art happening right now in the Bates internet world. You know, a lot of good fans are posting things, and so if you wanna see that, you can follow me on Twitter, and I post all that good stuff. Joe, where can we find you?
On the Twitters at JOEFLIPO. It was a pleasure, you guys. We will see you next week.
If you're lucky.
If you're lucky, says the pen. Thank you so much. We'll see you guys next week.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other After shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.